Penguin Random House Audio presents Return to Uluru, The Hidden History of a Murder in Outback Australia by Mark McKenna. Read for you by David Linsky. For Edwin Ride. The Story of Kunia and Luru. The Kunia Python woman came from far away in the east to hatch her children at Uluru. She carried her eggs strung around her neck like a necklace and brought them to rest at Kunia Piti on Uluru's northeast corner. There she left the eggs on the ground. Kunia camped at Tapuchi and hunted in the nearby sandhills. As she left and entered her camp, she formed deep grooves in the rock. These grooves are still there. One day, Kunia had to draw on all her physical and magical powers to avenge the death of her young nephew, also a Kunia. He had enraged a group of Liru, or poisonous brown snakes, who travelled from the southwest to take revenge on him. They saw him resting at the base of Uluru and rushed upon him, hurling their spears. Many spears hit the rock face with such force that they pierced it, leaving a series of round holes that are still obvious. The poor Kunia, outnumbered, dodged what he could, but eventually fell dead. When news of the young python's death reached his aunt on the other side of Uluru, she was overcome with grief and anger. She raced along the curves of the rock to Mutajulu Waterhole, where she confronted one of the Liru warriors, who mocked her grief and rage. Kunia began a dance of immense power and magic. As she moved toward the Liru warrior, she scooped up sand and rubbed it over her body. Her rage was so great that it spread like a poison, saturating the area at that time. In a fearsome dance, she took up her wana, or digging stick, and struck the head of the Liru. But her anger was now beyond restraint, and she hit him again across the head. He fell dead, dropping his shield near Mutajulu Waterhole, where Kunia herself remains as a sinuous black line on the eastern wall. The blows she struck are two deep cracks on the western wall, and the Liru shield, now a large boulder, lies where it fell. Part 1. The Dead Heart. A traveller may now describe Central Australia as a heartbreaking wilderness. J. W. Gregory, The Dead Heart of Australia, 1906. 1. Yokanunna. In November 2019, I visited the South Australian Museum in Adelaide to see if a certain man's skull was among the collection of human remains held in the museum's keeping place. A number of archival collections had been checked, and a forensic anthropologist was attempting to match the man's skull with the unprovenanced remains thought most likely to belong to him. He had been murdered in 1934, but the forensic anthropologist could only positively identify the skull. Museum officials Anna Russo and Professor John Carty and I decided that we would travel together to Uluru, formerly known as Ayers Rock, a huge, iconic monolith, more or less in the centre of Australia, that is home to the Aboriginal people, the Anangu. There, we would inform Sammy Wilson, chair of three community organisations, Mutajulu Community Aboriginal Corporation, Uluru Katatuta Board of Management, and the Central Land Council, that the Indigenous person whose skull this was had been identified. He was, in fact, the granduncle of Sammy Wilson. His name was Yokanunna. Before we headed for Uluru, Anna and I drove to the large factory-like building in a nearby Adelaide suburb where the museum houses the human remains in its collection. Years of chasing down the events surrounding Yokanunna's killing at Uluru in Central Australia had led me to this nondescript repository of horrors. We entered a vast space with little natural light and walked through several rooms, signing in as we moved from one area to the next. When we reached the room where Yokanunna's skull was stored, I noticed a number of wooden boxes stacked in the corner, draped in the Aboriginal flag. The provenance of these human remains had been established, and now they were waiting to be collected by elders and returned to country. Nearby, medium-sized cardboard boxes containing Aboriginal remains that were moved from the University of Adelaide in 2017 were stored on four shelves. Yokonunna's skull rested in box 39. Anna took the box from the shelf and laid it on the table. She turned on an overhead lamp, put on white cotton gloves, carefully removed the skull and placed it on tissue-like paper. With the stark white light bearing down from above, the words etched in capitals on the crown were clearly visible. Yokonunna. Complete skeleton. As Anna explained, this naming was unusual. Perhaps the skull was so labelled because Yokonunna's remains were crucial evidence in the 1935 Commonwealth Board of Inquiry into Yokonunna's death. We noticed the missing initiation tooth and the crazing on the skull's surface, a thin spidery web that indicated it had spent considerable time in the ground before exhumation. The slight yellowing of the bone was probably caused by tissue residue or the chemicals that may have been used to clean the skull. 85 years after Yokonunna's death, his remains were still subject to the invader's gaze, still the captive object of inquiry and examination. Anna placed the skull back in the box and we washed our hands before walking into the next room. There, stacked on shelves from floor to ceiling, were more unprovenanced remains that had come to the museum from Adelaide University. Mandibles, hip bones, collarbones, vertebrae, and countless others, filed in numbered cardboard boxes. Perhaps Yokonunna's post-cranial remains were here, but testing the contents of every box would be an expensive and prolonged process. It was also possible that Professor John Clayland, who headed the Board of Inquiry into Yokonunna's death, or someone else could have handed them over to the university's medical school for teaching purposes, in which case they would have been discarded long ago. Above me on the very top shelf, standing upright and wrapped tightly in plastic, were casts made of the heads of Aboriginal men and women by the archaeologist and ethnologist Norman Tyndale from the 1930s. The thickness of the plastic that encased them made it impossible to discern any features. This grotesque mausoleum, evidence of the racism and violence committed by the state against Australia's Indigenous people over so many years, existed in a permanent limbo. With their origins unknown, the human remains cannot be returned to country. Yet, they cried out for a keeping place that would pay them due cultural respect. As for Tyndale's scientific monuments to inhumanity, the subjects' communities will guide journeys back to country and make sure these traces of their ancestors' spirits return home safely. They cannot be destroyed. That would erase the truth. Nor can they be placed in public view, for that would only perpetuate the injustice. We drove back to the museum discussing the next steps in the long journey back to the families at Uluru. Seen for so long as barely human, Aboriginal people had suffered the same fate as stuffed animals exhibited in the Adelaide Museum. They were shot, collected, studied, objectified, and categorised, a people and their cultures marked as primitive curiosities, destined to be dispossessed by their usurpers. Yokonunna's remains were one among thousands. Aboriginal remains were collected by the South Australian Museum from the late 19th century, but the practice began from the moment the British arrived in Australia in 1788. Private and state institutions throughout Australia and overseas hold vast collections of human remains and ethnographic material which, in the name of scientific racism and an allegedly superior British civilization, were either traded, raided from resting places and burial sites, souvenired during the frontier wars, or stolen from Aboriginal people across the continent. By the early 20th century, the South Australian government declared that all native remains found on Crown lands were to be brought to the museum in Adelaide, a policy that continued until the 1960s. Today, the Museum Board cares for almost 5,000 ancestral remains, both Australian Aboriginal and from overseas nations. Of the 4,500 Aboriginal ancestors About 3,700 are from South Australian burial sites.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?